Welcome to Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Hope you survive the experience.
Those boys are so handsome!
One writer.
One artist.
One weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I am your host, Robbie Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
And we are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. This is episode 34. Happy New Year, Handsomeites. In the new year comes our awards show, which will be coming up later in this episode. But we're going to jump right into checking in.
I played and finished a really amazing game. You've probably heard of it. It's called Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons.
Yeah, actually, I watched Kim play it yesterday.
Wait, who's Kim?
She's a soda manufacturing magnate. Has recently taken me in as her ward.
That's interesting. Is Kim like an acronym then?
No. It's her. That's all. It's like Cher or Madonna.
Okay. Well, that's good.
Kim. That's it.
I was thinking that was like the name of a company, but you know, it's like a Korean soda manufacturer, I assume.
Yes, it makes it simpler.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
South Korea, though. They don't go into North Korea. It's all South.
No, that would just be. That would just be too bleak.
Exactly. But I watch it. Part of the deal is I watch her play video games. She just gets lonely. So I watched her play Brothers.
Did she finish it?
She did.
Okay. I'm not going to discuss the game because I think it's beautiful and I think that everyone should play it. But it is the saddest goddamned game.
Yeah, that's what I was like watching.
I think that maybe we should have like a spoiler like session. Maybe on the next episode we could talk about it again because I kind of want to discuss it, but I don't want to get too deep into it right now. Just checking in. But goddamn it, it's so sad, and it was like. It hurt even more because my brother bought it for me.
Oh my god.
Just because it's a game about two brothers.
Yes.
And he thought it was a cool play mechanic and, you know, all the normal, like, indie game stuff. I guess I could talk about the play mechanic, which is really just genius. Because it uses the two analog sticks and the two shoulder buttons on you know, your standard game controller, and you operate, you move around like both, like the big brother and the little brother. And each one sort of has his own interactions with the world, and, you know, like they'll talk to NPCs differently, and, you know, some of, like, the big brother does, like, the heavy lifting, and the little brother squeezes through, like, you know, like bars and stuff like that. God damn, what a fantastic game. What a fantastic, sad, sad, sad game.
Yeah, I was watching the last half hour or so.
That's where it stabs you right in the heart.
It does. It's very, very, very sad.
Yeah, it's
very beautiful. Very nice looking game.
It is, and it's I think one of the best examples of what an exciting art form video games are. Because I think that's like Mass Effect 3, how everyone got so upset with the ending to that. When things happen to you in a video game, they're not just happening to the characters. They're kind of happening to you, too.
Yes.
Particularly something like Mass Effect. You're going through all of these things, you know? Your brain doesn't really do a good job about differing between reality and fiction. in these kind of things. So you're going through all of these trials and tribulations, and you're experiencing all these emotions. And then when tragic things happen to characters, I mean, it sucks.
Yes.
And I think that's something that's just kind of fascinating about games as an art form. It's different from, you know, a sad movie or a sad book or something.
Yeah, because you're putting in the time.
Yeah.
You're not, yeah, I mean, the movie, you get 2 hours to spend with a character. In a game, mm-hmm. you can spend 50 hours with a character.
Yeah. And because you're, like, so directly controlling him, I don't know. I just think that there's just a deeper link there.
Yeah, I believe so. I agree with you.
There is a game called Two Brothers. And really? I own a copy and have not played it yet. It's also really cool-looking indie game. But it is not Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons, and I just thought I would clarify that.
Okay.
It's a rad friggin' game.
Yeah, I probably will play it through by myself eventually.
I would recommend it.
Because even playing is different than watching. Like, I know what's going to happen, but still, you actually doing it makes it entirely different.
You should play it. It is an amazing experience. I think my only criticism of it is the puzzles were A, too easy, and B, so obviously just crafted just for that play mechanic to solve them. Like, it wasn't like playing Portal where you figure out the puzzle and you're like, damn it, I feel awesome and clever. Yeah. It was just sort of like walking through it and, you know, feeling like an idiot when you can't figure it out, and then you're like, oh, wait, this is actually really easy.
Yeah. A lot of games like that. There's a lot of games, but...
No, it's true. Mechanics
are not necessarily, you know...
No, no. But I kind of...
It's just a part of the story.
Yeah, yeah. But it's, God, just so good. Could not give it any more praise.
Well, I have a couple of games myself to check in with.
Oh, why don't you just check them in there?
I'll do that then.
Woo.
Okay. The first is the newest Zelda game, Legend of Zelda Link Between Worlds, which is for the 3DS. I got a 2DS for Christmas, which is basically a 3DS that's flat, doesn't have the hinge,
mm-hmm.
and it does not have any three-dimensional capabilities, which is fine by me.
Yeah, I don't really get that gimmick, honestly.
I would just turn it off if I had a 3DS. I would just go to zero. So
I would turn it on whenever I wanted to throw up all over the place.
Yeah, that's every time I tried it, it just made me a little nauseous. So I just, you know, I prefer not having it at all. And it's cheaper. But the newest Zelda game, it is, in the broadest terms, very similar to A Link to the Past,
mm-hmm.
the SNES game. It's like the same or very similar map. Very similar controls, but it plays with that kind of in a very interesting way, where you're still going between worlds. Like in A Link to the Past, you're traveling between the different times, and this is you're like traveling into. You basically use the same kind of mechanic, like Fez almost,
mm-hmm.
or where you're like flipping back and forth. But I don't know how to describe it. You're basically become a painting on any two-dimensional surface and then moving on that two-dimensional surface. It's also like Paper Mario a little bit. I don't know. I can't think of another game that does it exactly the same.
You're blowing my mind.
There's probably other games that do it. I just can't think of them. But it's basically a certain point in the game, Link has this power. So any two-dimensional surface, he can imprint himself on it and then, you know, travel on it back and forth. You know, to get through past puzzles around certain areas. The other interesting thing about... And there's another world, obviously, that you travel to that's like a... It's called Lorule. Very clever, you know, opposed to Hyrule.
Mm-hmm.
There's Hyrule and Lorule. But the other interesting thing is about this. They're in, like, most Zelda games, it's like the dungeons are set up in a very particular order. You get the equipment necessary to... tackle a dungeon right before it, and then that leads you to that dungeon. because you can get to it because you now can lift rocks or have the hook shot or whatever. In this game, it's totally different. You have access to all the equipment right at the beginning. All you have to do is you rent it, basically. But the thing is, once you rent all that, you can rent every piece of equipment and have access to everything right at the beginning. The problem is, once you die, it all goes back. The guy who you're renting it from reclaims everything, and you only have a certain amount of money, even though it's pretty generous with the money. But you'd have to re-rent everything. Or so you kind of, it's like you're basically economizing what inventory you want to take with you. But you can get to any dungeon. You know, if there's a dungeon in the way that needs a hookshot to get to, you can just go rent the hookshot and go to it. Or certain, you know, whatever. I think it's just really interesting, and it kind of plays on the, you know, the whole history of Zelda games. But it's and the soundtrack, Eric, you love. I mean, are you a fan of the Link to the Past soundtrack? I mean,
I think it'd be hard not to. It's such a classic, like iconic game soundtrack.
This soundtrack is really interesting because it plays on the themes in that, but takes it in a different direction, and it is really, really good.
It really hurts me that there are, like, Nintendo still makes, I think, at least for the DS platform, some of the best games for the kind of game player that I am, and yet I have to buy. I mean, what motivated you to get a DS?
The games that are. I mean, I saw the new Zelda game, saw that it's one of the best Zelda games in the past decade. They say it's better, you know. And Animal Crossing, I'm a big Animal Crossing sucker. They don't make that for any other. They don't make that for any other.
No, it's true. It's
any
true.
Any other consoles other platforms.
No, that's what I'm saying. Does the DS even fit into your lifestyle, though?
I mean, it can. Like, sometimes it
depends. Will you actually do it for its intended purpose and, like, take it somewhere? Will you put it in your pocket and take it on the road with you?
Not if for long journeys. Like, because we've been traveling. I mean, because we moved down here recently, we still have friends in Tampa and Orlando. You know, we've been driving those 3.5 hours, those 4 hours. You know, something for both me and Kim to play on the road, which is, I did do that for, actually, Kim actually gave it to me. I got it right before our big trip to Tampa and then up to, you know, my folks' place and then back. So it's something for us to both doodle with. Plus, we only have the one TV in the living room. If one of us is using it, if she's using it, I can just tool around on the DS and play, you know, I can sit next to her on the couch and just play that instead of, you know, or my computer. But, you know, it's another thing that I can just carry with me and play with. But it's mainly just the exclusive software that you can't get any. The Fire Emblem game is really interesting. Are you familiar with the newest Fire Emblem game, Eric?
I am familiar with the other Fire Emblem games. I know of the series.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like Final Fantasy Tactics, tactical RPG kind of games. But the thing is, like, the really interesting mechanic in this one is that any people you take into combat, like in your party, they'll eventually, like, have kids, and then they become your characters too. So, like, the more you have them in combat, eventually they'd be like, will form a romance and then have children, and then you have a new character that's their child that also grows up and stuff. It sounded really interesting to me. Plus the Animal Crossing, the Legend of Zelda. The new Pokemon game really kind of intrigued me. I haven't been following Pokemon games in a long time.
They're all apparently amazing.
Yeah, the new stuff that people were talking about it, you know, X and Y and the new creatures. It intrigued me, so.
I just don't understand the Nintendo business model. I mean, I guess they don't sell, their systems aren't sold at a loss necessarily, like the way that, like, the Sony does, or the PlayStation does, or you know, Microsoft does the Xbox. I don't know. It just seems like it would make a lot more sense to them to put their software on a broader platform, because they make such excellent games, and
You don't want to buy a whole new console just to play.
No. No, I don't. I do not want to buy a console that I'm going to get four games for, four amazing games, and then never play again.
Well, that's, I mean, I think that's what they want to sell their consoles, and that's how they think they do it. They buy making games exclusive to them that only they make.
I just feel like this has been their model since, you know, the 80s when the NES came out. Yeah. And I don't think it fits to the modern world anymore, or I'm not sure what it is. Their customers have moved on to become, you know, Sony and Microsoft people, or PC gamers, which, I mean, that's the camp I really sort of see myself.
I think it's, I mean, they're still, the Wii U is not selling at all.
No, it's terrible, and what sucks is there are going to be great games for it. Like, I want to play Super Mario 3D Land so bad. Yes. I love Mario games, and I will probably never play it, or at least I will not play it for several years, simply because it is locked on a system that I have no interest in buying because the gimmick is dumb, and I'm just really burned after the Wii that I had a couple good games, and then I was stuck with a device that was in standard definition.
Yeah.
And could not do anything but play, you know, four games and make dolls of my friends.
Yes. I mean, I don't think they have any real motivation. That's the thing. Because they're still, they have tons of money still from how well the Wii did.
Mm-hmm.
They could have a massive failure with Wii U, and it doesn't matter. And they're still selling tons and tons of 3DSs.
Yeah.
And tons of those games. And they can function with the Wii U selling poorly now, and maybe eventually as the market.
Who do you know that has a 3D or a 3 or a 2DS? They're only selling them to kids, I guess. I don't know anyone our age that has one.
I don't have any personal friends. I know of other people our age who own them. Mm-hmm. I just don't have one myself. I mean, I don't know any personal.
I'd be curious to see the sales statistics on that. Everyone I personally know that has one, other than yourself, is like a child. Like, I only know kids that have DSs, and that really kind of seems.
I do know some, like, of coworkers I had who had kids who had DSs, but I mean, mm-hmm. I know people online who talk about the new Pokemon game or the new Zelda game. Like, I was just reading someone's tweets about the soundtrack last night, and who's he's older than us. He's in his 40s, I believe.
Yes.
So he has one.
But. I mean, I'm not going to say, it's just kind of heartbreaking to me. I'm certainly not going to carry around another brick in my pocket.
Yeah, it's certainly not for like, oh, I'm making a 15-minute run. We're making a 15-minute run to the grocery store. I'm not going to carry with me and play, you know, in the car.
Mm-hmm.
Like I would with my iPhone. I can play a quick, you know, game of Puzzle Quest or something on the ride. I'm not going to do that with a DS. The DS is still for long rides or just, you know, sitting on the couch.
I just feel like it doesn't make sense to put these games on a portable system that doesn't fit into people's lifestyle. I mean, I would probably, if all these games we're talking about were on the Wii U, I would buy them. I would buy a Wii U.
I don't know.
That would be enough people, to sell people, it to me.
People are still ask. I mean, they're still ask them why, and then, you know, they just get the typical kind of corporate response.
No, it's they're just going to dodge the question, and they're going to do whatever in the hell they want to do, and whatever. I think when they nearly go bankrupt, like Sega did, and then they just start making software, which is what they do best, then I think, you know, the world would be better and brighter.
You may have to wait a long time for that.
It might be. They're not like a huge juggernaut. You know, they're still a relatively small company.
Relatively, but I mean, they just made so much money off the Wii, original Wii, that they don't care at this point. Right now, at least.
We'll see how things shake out.
Their coffers are still full.
Hmm.
we got off on a tangent. I would also like to mention another game I recently played. I also got it on Steam. It's called The Stanley Parable. I think you should play this, Eric. I think you'd really like it.
Yeah, my brother suggested it to me, specifically because it has, what does it have, like 18 endings?
It has, yes, many endings.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the crux. It's like a criticism of games, game design, and choices in games.
Right.
It's really, it's basically you're an office worker named Stanley. You have a very, very boring job, but you find fulfilling. You just sit at a desk all day and type things into a computer. And that's literally how they put it. But there is this narrator who's talking and telling you what you're doing as you before you do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like it, you know, it says, "Oh, one day you come to work and no one's there," and then so and it tells you, "Oh, so maybe you'll go to the meeting room and check to see if anyone's there. Maybe you missed the memo," and so you walk to the meeting room, and then the narrator says, "But you see no one there," and so this narrator is telling you what you're doing. He's like telling your story, and then you're following along with it. The really crux of the game comes to this point. It's like the third thing that happens. You walk into this room and it says, and there's an open door on the left, and there's an open door on the right. And the narrator says, Stanley walks through the door, the open door on his left. And everything else in this game is about that choice and the choices off of it. It has like a very choose-your-own-adventure kind of feel, but every single ending, quote-unquote, there's no true ending, which I think is the most brilliant part. There's no thing like, oh, well, this feels more correct. They're not throwaways. Every single one is like a really solid critique about games and choices. I want to mention the one ending that I think is, I don't know if I should because it kind of ruins the game a little bit.
I sincerely want to play it. So
okay. I would mention it. It calls into question like the whole thinking about your choice in a video game. Like in some games, like throwing yourself off a cliff is perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
And how in real life you would never do these things. And yet in this game, like it redefines your like thinking. Cause you're playing then this game doesn't make you like we always like categorize games as real. You know, this game feels so real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's authentic and genuine. Mm-hmm. And then it has rules in it that make no sense in, like, real life. Like in Fallout, where you're carrying, like, 40 guns.
Right.
Or Skyrim, where you're like, you have the entire inventory of the world in your
backpack. You have 80 wheels of cheese.
Exactly. You throw them off a mountain. Makes no sense, and it doesn't have any kind of correlation to real life.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we do it because it's a game. We want to see what we can do. Like, we test the rules of the game. It does. This game is a great exploration of all those that line of thinking in all its different endings. But it's
fantastic.
Really good. Great on Steam. I definitely suggest it. It's a very fast game. Yeah, I mean, you can get majority of the endings in 3-4 hours. I mean, it's very fast playthrough. It even has a thing where I like a menu choice, start over, so you can just, you know, jump back at the beginning. And even the narrator even calls into question, like, how many times you've done something. He's like, all right, blah, 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 this happens. Like, things that become a formality, which I think is also really fun. But that's all I got. We are going to jump from checking in over to weekly floppies. I would first like to mention something we both missed, I guess, in Buzzkill number 4, which we read last week, which greatly improves my line of thinking about the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel stupid for missing it. Actually, the writer, Donnie Cates, actually tweeted at me what we missed, and I felt really dumb.
Oh, my God.
I didn't really think about it, because I guess I just didn't infer it. But there's in the one of the last pages, there is an empty bottle shown.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that he drank that to get his powers. It's not just kind of some empty symbolism. It is he was lying to his girlfriend. He was saying, "Oh, it's love." He drank Jack Daniels to get his powers, which means he's a liar and more interesting. And I love that. That makes me like the book like 1,000 times more.
You see, I definitely saw that.
Yeah, I saw the bottle, but I had no idea.
I had no. I don't think it's clear what that means.
Yeah, that's. I just thought it was like.
Well, I'm just like, did he drink it or did he say? I mean, I definitely see where you're coming from. That is a superior ending.
Yes.
I
missed it, and so we both missed it. We didn't. I'd like to mention that because it makes it a lot better. Makes me like that book so much more. That he's lying.
Lying. Just what doesn't it improve?
Honestly. But from that, we are going to jump into this week's books. We are starting off with Marvel. Get your app open.
I'll open your app.
Oh! Don't make any promises you can't keep.
Okay.
Starting off with New Avengers number 13. Written by Jonathan Hickman. Arts by Simone Bianchi. Color artist Adriano Del Alpi. Sure. Letters by Joe Hermano. You like my pronunciation?
I love everything about you.
Ooh, this is getting better and better. Mm-hmm. This is kind of showing kind of the effects of inhumanity, but it really does it in a kind of interesting way because we're seeing this. You know, this plays on the tropes of this book, basically, where every week we're seeing, like, a new incursion event. But this time we see it from kind of the perspective of an alternate Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting, you know, these different superheroes and them finally doing battle with groups that the Black Swan has, you know, been mentioning. Like, these are the people mm-hmm. you should be scared of. And you see why you should be scared of them. Because they are quite...
bad motherfuckers.
There you go. Bad motherfuckers.
That's what's on their wallet.
The alternate Earth, the group of superheroes, which is a similar group to the ones in our Earth. But, you know, a couple alternate costumes. But they throw everything they got at these guys and get their asses kicked.
Yep, Black Bolt gets dissolved.
Yeah, that's not good, yeah. But we get a better understanding of the danger that they're in. Like, the problem they're facing is a lot worse than they think. And it's kind of like out of the pan and into the fire. I mean, Infinity just ended, and they're in the thralls of inhumanity, and they are outmatched, outgunned, clearly. Then their discussion with the Black Swan is quite interesting as well. Did you like this art?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you like the art? It's a different artist than they've been using. Because Diodato has been doing it usually, and now it's Bianchi.
You know, it's atmospheric, and it's got its strong points. I feel like some of the drawing and like the faces and angles... I don't know that it's weak. Maybe it's a little naive. It's got a little bit more character, I think, than we're used to seeing in comic books, almost to the point of looking flawed. So it's unusual that way, and I both like and dislike it for that, if that makes sense. Do you follow my line of thinking there?
I think I understand what you mean. Mm. It's unique, which sets it apart. You know, it doesn't look like, but it also looks a little weird at certain points in it. You know,
yes.
I understand what you mean by the facial, like, because sometimes, like, you're looking at an upward angle at some of these characters' faces, and they just look weird.
Yes, it's a quirkier art style that I think, looking at it in some of these panels, it doesn't really look like a superhero comic. It looks like it should be a little more like an indie adventure comic or something. I think I probably wouldn't even like it if not for like the finishing artists of the, you know, inking and of course was there a separate inker and penciler, or was there, it one there one was, artist?
No, I think Bianchi did both.
Okay. Well, there's some of them that look less finished than others, but I think the color is really I do not think I would enjoy this art in black and white. I think that the Photoshop artist or the digital painting is really giving it a much richer feel than the pencils and inks alone.
I agree with you. It certainly adds a lot.
Marvel really has their shit together with their painters.
One of their editors did a listing of all the different artists, you know, that are work for Marvel, and he's like, we don't have a house style. And I'm glad.
No, it's definitely a better thing. And I'm glad that they'll take a risk with an artist like this that is, I don't know if I would say raw or naive, or I definitely don't mean it in a negative way, but it's a little indie. You know, it's
a little different.
It's not your standard superhero style, and it's kind of refreshing to see that. At the same time, it's not my favorite, but it is nice to see someone taking some risks.
I like it. I think it works here for the most part.
I think it does too. I mean, that it's good storytelling. I did get a little turned around sort of in the middle. I mean, it's clear what was going on by the end, but it's still, I don't know, something about it gets a little murky for me, but still very well done.
New Avengers 13, still very good book, you know, every week in and out.
It's yeah.
Really solid. And this is coming out of Infinity, so there's even more subtext here. So I'm going to buy.
Yeah, absolutely should buy this.
Yeah. So, it's New Avengers 13. We are double buy. Next up is Superior Foes of Spider-Man number 7, which has a little bit of a departure from where they've been going. This is it's for the most part just a solo kind of backstory book about the Beetle, the newest Beetle, which is the only female member in this whatever they want to call their group, Superiors, yeah, Sinister Six, whatever. But she's actually it's revealed at the end of the last issue that she's Tombstone's daughter. But it's a little bit of a departure.
Mm-hmm. It's very different, and honestly, I think that it's my favorite of these so far.
It's really good.
It's excellent, and I think some of the best character work they've done. I don't know. It was funny, and that she's very compelling. You know, like I want to know more about her.
Yeah, they've kind of like shown a little bit of glimpses of this throughout the series, but this is the first time. Aside from Boomerang, we really haven't gotten in-depth glances at any of the other characters, and this is finally we get into her, and it's really funny. She's this like mob boss's daughter. He doesn't want her to get into organized crime, and she desperately does. And it's kind of a playoff on...
Well, not just organized crime, but being a supervillain.
Yeah, that's true. That scene where she's the arbitrator between...
Zemo
And then the Fixer. Yeah, it's it's really good.
Yes.
It's so good. But
here's a question, because wasn't Tombstone... He was one of the original Spider-Man villains, wasn't he? Like, I don't know, like one of the first 10 issues, he was a villain in it, right?
I don't remember necessarily.
That's what I remember, that he's an old Spider-Man villain, which is why he's even in his comic.
He is an old. I mean, he's been around for a long time. I don't know exactly when he was. We will find out very shortly. Wikipedia will come to the rescue.
Yes.
But I forgot to mention the credits on this. Nick Spencer is the writer. Rich Ellis is the artist. Lee Luffridge doing the colors. Joe Caramagna is the letters. Tombstone first appeared in Web of Spider-Man. Wow, it's not that old, actually. 36, March
1988.
Yep. So, not that old. I mean...
Well, I was thinking... Who am I thinking of, then, that was... I'm thinking of those ridiculous old mobsters, like the guy that would, like, lasso people.
I can't even remember those guys. The monsters, like, there's Hammerhead... There's Tombstone, the Owl, which is most really was the main villain in this one for the
right Right.
Still is, ostensibly. I mean, Kingpin, obviously. I can't think of any off the top of my head.
Well, this the thing that is confusing to me is, and this is just a stupid thing to even complain about in a comic book because timelines just don't make sense, but this guy's got a grown-up daughter, and I don't know. I'm just really wondering how all this fits in there.
Oh, I don't
know. It fits in a little bit better, I think, considering that. But when I was thinking that he was like a Spider-Man villain from the 60s, I was like, how does this work?
No, I don't know. I think, yeah, I don't think you're not supposed to think about it too much.
I guess not.
The weird shifting time scale.
It only exists in that moment.
Continuity is the devil.
Yeah, well.
But this series is getting better. Like the 5 was better than 4, and 6 was better than 5, and it just every issue is stepping up its game. So I'm definitely a buy.
Yes, I'm a buy on this excellent book as well. I think this is. I mean, the art is similar to the other ones.
Yeah, Steve.
But I think
Steve Lieber's been doing all of it until now.
I know. It's just not. It's not a radical departure, but it's. I think some of the best. Certainly that I recall in the series.
It's still very. It's very good.
Do you know what it reminds me of? Is Hawkeye.
Well, yeah. That's. I mean, Lieber.
I mean, how many times have we said that?
Yeah, I mean, but it's a feeling like. Steve Lieber was doing the fill-in issues when David Aja, you know, couldn't get him out in time.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just kind of, all these people have vaguely similar styles. You know, they're not the same,
mm-hmm.
but they work, you know, next to each other. And yes, I don't think this book would exist if Hawkeye wasn't a hit.
We have Hawkeye to thank for that.
We do have Hawkeye.
Hawkeye.
So, we're done with Marvel. We're going to jump over to DC. Our first book, I had no idea that this was, on, like, even, like, a planned book. Like, this is not on my radar at all, but I saw it was coming out. I'm like, we just finished Sandman.
Mm-hmm.
I might as well, and it's a relaunch of Dead Boy Detectives, number one.
Yep, isn't it wacky?
Yeah, written by Toby Litt with Mark Buckingham doing pencils, and he's credited his story, so I assume there's, you know, mixed responsibilities there. Gary Erskine on inks, Lee Lefferidge again on colors. He just did the colors for Superior Foes of Spider-Man, and Todd Klein mm-hmm. on letters. And
gets around. It's pretty evident too. There's a lot of stylistic. Similarities. Yeah.
But I did you read the original Dead Boy Detectives, Eric? I think you mentioned you had.
I did not. I mean, okay. it was kind of a... it looked kind of like a kid's book, and it was done by Jill Thompson in her sort of kid's book style. Right. Kind of manga-esque, so I passed on it.
Okay,
but
this is for those unfamiliar. Dead Boy Detectives was originally a book in the 90s, a spinoff of the Sandman. Was it in the 90s? I thought late 90s.
I want to say it was more 2000s.
Early 2000s. Okay.
I was going to say it's early 2000s, like 2001 to 2004 would be my assumption.
Okay. But it's basically following around the two characters are introduced in the Sandman, both dead. Both dead boys, ghosts from the boarding school. There's two issues with dealing with a boarding school, and one boy dies and meets the other ghost and eventually dies and becomes a ghost himself. Right? Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I'm sorry. I'm just checking on our information on Dead Boy Detectives. It apparently. There was a book called Children's Crusade in the 90s that came out first, and then Jill did her book in 2001.
Okay.
Wait a minute. No. I'm reading this wrong. She did it in 2005.
Okay. That's lighter.
But yeah.
That seems, I don't know, quick for a relaunch. But I don't know. This
well, this appears to follow more closely the thematically the 1993 take on these characters,
right?
Which I had no idea. I only remembered the one that I saw from Jill Thompson, which is it's a lot more kid friendly,
right? This I mean
book
this
about
is,
dead children.
Yeah, this is two boys from a boarding school who are ghosts now. One dies in the Sandman. The other one was already a ghost, and they're from one died. What the older boy is. The older ghost is from what? He died in the teens? 19-teens?
Yeah, I would say like World War I era.
Yeah, and then the older boy died in the Sandman run, so in the 90s. And now they are detectives, like, investigating things. But most
I think
of the story,
that's my favorite thing, is like the hard-boiled dialogue that the 1990s kid just keeps spouting out.
Yeah, like,
because it's so preposterous. He's trying to act like such a hard-ass. He's a little dead kid.
Yes, he is. A lot of this story is following this a new character,
mm-hmm.
this female character, child of these two like avant-garde modern artists who are just trying to make their name for themselves, and mm-hmm. she's almost dies in this weird accident, and then ends up going to the same boarding school that the two boys died at. And that's kind of interesting. It's basically introducing her. You get kind of insights into the two boys via their weird narration, like Eric already has mentioned. And, I mean, that's the gist of the story, honestly. The art style is similar to what we were just reading, Superior Foes.
It is, but I think Mark Buckingham he's known for Fables, and it's all yes. like I feel like I'm reading an issue of Fables when I'm reading this book, and I'm drawn to it for that.
Yeah.
Like the layout of the pages is like a Fable story. The story feels more like a Fable story. It's I don't know. I have been a fan of Fables for a long, long time, and I don't know. It was kind of nice to read this just for that.
Yeah, I liked it. I think I wish I could have, I don't know, I gotten more of, I don't think, I think this comic is not necessarily going to be, I don't know how much of the series as a whole is going to be about this girl,
mm-hmm.
or about the boys, or about both of them. So it's hard to, I don't know if this is emblematic of what the series is going to be. I still enjoyed it. I just don't know what to expect from the series, I guess.
It almost feels like she's going to start investigating them.
Yeah, it's supposed to be leading us into.
Yes.
I know we're supposed to, like, she's going back to their boarding school, so they're worried about her, and I don't know if we're supposed to be feeling, is it supposed to be ominous or whatever, but it's still very good. There's some clever storytelling in it, even though mm-hmm. it's a little bit muddy at certain points with the whole thing with her phone and taking pictures, and then their narration versus her narration. It's all happening all at the same time. You're trying.
Yeah, there's just a little bit too much narration in the book. I kind of feel like they should tag team it a little bit, and they're trying to do it like The Watchmen too much with like just a billion like threads of narration going on at once.
Yeah, and it just gets a little bit too much at a certain point. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it ruins the book by any means. It's just kind of confusing a couple times.
Yes.
But yeah, it's still I'm very good. I'm optimistic.
Yeah, I think I'm very positive about the book. I'm a pretty confident buy.
Yeah, I'm a buy as well. Double buy.
Double buy.
And next, the other DC book of the week is Lar Flees, number 6.
Oh my god, y'all. Oh my god.
Okay, written before Eric gushes. Plot and script by Keith Giffen and J.M. DeMatteis. Scott Collins on art. Mike Atea on colors. Dave Sharp with the letters. Okay, Eric, go on.
I don't want anyone to buy this book so I can have them all. In true Lar Feliz fashion.
Yeah, exactly.
I think this is the most awesome Lar Feliz book to date. And I don't think this is the first time I've said this. This book is really cool. God. I just had such a good time reading it. It's just great because they managed to make it so epic and at the same time so irreverent, and it takes itself very seriously and not seriously at all. It's just marvelous.
Yeah.
The art is, I think, some of the strongest. I don't know. It's just a dynamite book. I adore this book.
Yeah, I don't think I like it as much as Eric does because I don't know
that anyone can. No one
likes this book as much as Eric does. I still enjoy this. Again, Eric said this is the best issue so far. I don't know if it's the best, but it's up there. I like it more than the past couple. It's very, it moves very quickly. It's funny. It's action-packed. And, I think my biggest complaint was that Lar Feliz is getting kind of boring. Like, the character, not the book. But in this book, he kind of regains his thunder,
yeah,
so to speak. Which I think is part of the point. But, yeah, it's still, yes, it's very good. And I agree with the art. It's probably the strongest it's been.
The interesting thing about it, a lot of these books, one or the other will sort of be picking up the slack, whether it's, pencils, inks, or the finishing, the coloring.
Mm-hmm.
To this, they really seem to enhance each other. Like I feel like they're all really doing their job. Like, I don't know that separately they would have quite the right impact. Because there's some drawing in some of the faces, particularly this space goddess. Just do not like the way she's handled. But it just works so beautifully as a finished product. I really do. This is all around just a very strong book. I just could not just give a more glowing recommendation of it. It's so, so excellent.
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, I would also like to mention the page layouts.
Yeah,
very. They're varied.
Mm-hmm.
Every page has a kind of different feel, and people don't mention that a lot, but it's such a huge impact on how a book feels and how the story's told. And this book, you get full page, then you get broken down in different size panels, back and forth. It's really good. And I agree there. It's a very good book. I was kind of my interest was waning as in the last couple issues. This has reignited my love for Lar Feliz.
Yeah,
but very good. I'm ready for the next issue.
Absolutely.
So that's Lar Feliz number 6. I am a buy.
I am a buy as well, but they're all mine.
Eric's buying every
digital copy.
Every digital copy, all of them. Next up, we got our indie books. That's right, books, not singular, but plural. We're starting off with Revelations number 1. I was not sure if I was going to pick this or not for us to read. I just was trying to... It's like a grittier story, but has Humberto Ramos, which is not... I don't really correlate his style with a darker... This is a murder mystery, kind of with religious conspiracy kind of stuff going on, supernatural influences. There's a murder in the Vatican, and this cop from Scotland Yard, right?
Scotland Yard.
Yeah, he's called in, but from a friend who's in the church to investigate. And I thought that kind of... I don't correlate Humberto Ramos's art with this type of story. I thought it'd be interesting for us to...
So you don't think that a detective story with a hard-boiled detective, hard-smoking detective, with people with jelly bean faces...
No, I don't. That's exactly right. What did you think about this, Eric? I'm very curious.
It's tolerable, the art in this episode. It's really kind of my biggest obstacle because I do just get sort of irate when I see his art. This is more palatable somehow. Let me look at the... Did he have anyone working with him, or was it just Ramos?
Written by Paul Jenkins, art by Humberto Ramos, colors by Leonardo Alea and Edgar Delgado, letters by Darren Bennett. Do you think it's some of the colors, the colors in it?
Yeah, they're keeping it simpler with just pencils and layouts, and then the colorist is really sort of what's making it work here. I was thinking, as I was reading it, that he was doing, like, all of the art. This was just, like, this was his, like, color style. I kind of feel like he's not pulling his weight here, then. Because it's the color and sort of the fullness of these panels, you know, that's telling this very cinematic story, despite his goofy cartooniness.
Yeah, I'm just... You mentioned the jelly bean eyes. Mm. It's only the detective and his friend who have that. Everyone else have normal eyes. Like, at least for Humberto Ramos, they have normal eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Why does their eyes look like they are from a teddy bear, and then everyone else's eyes don't? Everyone else has white eyes with, you know, a pupil. And they look like button eyes from a stuffed animal. So I just don't understand why those two
interesting observation.
I just don't understand why those two characters, because it definitely stands out, and I don't think it helps. I think it's negative.
Yeah.
It makes them look not like real people.
Mm-hmm.
And this is supposed to be like a hard-boiled story. Making them look like teddy bears, or jelly bean eyes, as you put it, does not help.
Well, I said jelly bean heads. They have jelly bean heads. They have jelly bean.
They do have jelly bean heads.
Yeah, they have jelly bean heads and button eyes. I would say button eyes.
There you go.
But yes, I actually didn't. I was assuming that they all had the dumb button eyes.
No, I mean, like,
because when you see somebody with a normal eye, you're like, oh, that's just a guy with eyes.
Yes, like you look at the ostensibly evil cardinal. He has normal eyes. The guard has normal eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But then his buddy, I mean, the detective and his buddy. Oh wait, there's one like the. Like the, it looks like one of like a doorbell guy or something. I don't even know what
it is. the big dude. I think we're on the same page.
I don't even know, but he has button eyes too. But there's one little character who has like he's only in there for one page, whatever. But everyone else has normal eyes. I just don't understand. What do you think about the story?
I really love all the elements of it. A conspiracy, a murder conspiracy in the church.
Yeah.
Is a pretty fantastic setting for like a crime story.
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing that it compels me to read despite how repellent I find the art. And just let me clarify, I don't necessarily think he's a bad artist. His younger work, I think, is bad. I think he's talented, but I personally find it repellent.
I am hit or miss for the most part on depends on the book, and like you said, the coloring in this downplays that style, makes it less cartoony.
Yes,
for the most part, and I don't know what whatever finish they have on this thing. I don't know how to describe it. I don't think I have vocabulary for it, but it makes it look more noir.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's got a softness to it because they're sort of doing this almost like a watercolor wash, but it's digital over top of these pencils with very minimal inking, which all the heavy blacks and things might have been applied digitally. It's hard to say because there's not a lot of evidence. So, you know, there's pencil hatching and that sort of texture mark that's in it and not a lot of evidence of... pen and brush work. It gives it like that sort of atmosphere like you're talking about, that sort of grit to it, I think.
Yeah, and his aside from those weird eyes. I mm-hmm. don't mind the art. It's serviceable for the story.
Yeah.
And the story itself, I've read a few different kind of, you know, there's Dan Brown is the, you know, the notable guy who's written the church conspiracy, you know, murders.
Did you ever read any of those books?
No. Never read them. I know what they're about.
It's probably for the best. I hear they're not very good.
No, I don't. People always argue, oh, you have to read it to really have a good opinion. No, I read people's opinions that I value, and they've all said I shouldn't read it, so I'm not going to waste my time. But
that's the way it works.
It's the same tropes, you know, kind of, you know, these vast conspiracies, but I don't think you've seen that really in comic books very much. But I like it. I'm willing to give it a shot and put up with the art for the see what the story goes and give it a couple issues, and then if it's still at that point.
I think Humberto Ramos is I have enough respect for him that I will keep giving him chances. he's not it's if this book was drawn by like Rob Liefeld, this would have a very different tone. Because we would just be like, yeah, this is okay, but god damn it, Liefeld.
Yeah.
I think that Ramos, he's got respect for what he's doing. He just does it in a way that I don't personally care for.
I'm a buy. I'm gonna give it that. I liked it enough that I don't.
No, I think it's a solid book. I'm a buy as well.
Okay.
I can't believe I'm saying I'm a buy on a Humberto Ramos book, but hey, what the hell? Weirder things have happened.
Exactly. So that's Double Buy Revelations number one. Finally, we're going to finish up the week with Regular Show Skips number three, which, interestingly enough, I mean, I didn't see this on the release list, you know, when I was surfing it to see what would we read this week. And then I'm flipping through Comixology, and I saw it. I'm like, really? I didn't notice it. And I usually, I mean, I keep track of the things, you know, we're reading and, you know, see what is coming back up. And it wasn't there. And then I see, and I'm like, okay, well, I bought it, and then I added it to our list. That's why we have six books this week. And then I'm reading my Twitter feed, and Mad Rupert, she's like, and, you know, I saw the Comics Alliance did a preview of this book. A preview? But it's already out. Wouldn't it be a review? She retweets something about it's being released next week. And I'm like, I already own this book. How can it... So maybe they released it digitally early? That is my only guess, that it came out a week early digitally. And then it's coming out in hard copy next Wednesday. That's my only guess. I don't know. But this is Regular Show Skips number three, written and illustrated by Matt Rupert, and colors by Whitney Kogar. This is seeing Skips kind of go deeper and deeper into this weird time adventure where the world keeps ending and he keeps having to respawn and try and stop it with the help of this weird time cop. I think that's the best way to describe it. Any thoughts, Eric?
It's a very silly book and everyone should read it.
It's very silly.
I think it's a little bit more concrete, a little bit less formulaic than your typical regular show story.
Yes.
Which are all just like, you know,
we're doing something normal, and then something not normal happens.
Exactly. You know, it's always some weird formula, and then, yeah, something stupid and mystical happens, and for just unexplainable reasons.
Yeah.
But I like that this has more of a story, and I really, really like her art in this. I really like the way she draws the time cop. I think he looks really awesome. It's just a nice little book, you know, it's nice, rich. It's got, it's done very, very well.
Yeah. It's fun and light and silly,
mm-hmm.
which we don't, I think this is something we hammer into the ground every week. There's not enough of it in comic books. There's not enough silliness. That's why we like Larfleeze so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's silly. It doesn't take itself seriously. And this doesn't either. It's nice. It's light. It's funny. I love his notebook. The Time Cop's notebook.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
He's like, and he's like, his notes on Skips on Skip about you know, he wants to be his friend, and
maybe we could be buds, and it's X'd out. His colleagues.
Yes.
I was expecting it to say like bros or something.
Yes. The Gumball. He's just.
Yes.
He's just the Gumball. That's really good.
He really creeps me out. It's like such a nonsense thing that he's a talking gumball machine.
It is. It's really weird, but it's supposed to work.
I don't understand regular shows sometimes. It's almost like it's just for stoners.
I enjoy regular show. I've never.
I watched several seasons of it. It cracks me up. It's funny. I wouldn't enjoy these books if I didn't like the show.
No, exactly. But
it's just so, like, it had to have been conceived with just shitloads of marijuana. There's probably no other way.
One other thing I'd like to mention is I do like that this is giving Skips a little bit of character.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit. You know, you don't see it a lot. At least the regular show I've watched. I haven't watched every episode, but most of it is just like kind of Skips is like this weird figure that he's fixes
sort of
things.
Yeah, he's sort of the Deus Ex Machina. He just comes in and he's like, poof.
Yeah, it fixes things. And, I mean, this is kind of playing on that a little bit.
Right.
And that is he trying to fix things, but you get, like, he actually says, like, more than six words at a time. So you get a little bit of him, his character, quote-unquote.
Well, I think my hat's off to Maddie. She's doing a sweet job on this book, and I look forward to the next three issues.
Yeah, it's very good. So, regular show Skips number 3. I'm a buy.
Yep. You should also travel through time and buy it early, the way we did.
I apparently, yes. Just all you have to do is have a tablet or a computer.
And go a magic tablet that magic travels tablet through time.
Through time.
Traveling through time. Let's just keep doing that.
That for just, another
it's,
hour.
It's not annoying at all, is it?
I don't think so. I don't think it's annoying. I think people really like that. Traveling through time. Now that we're done with weekly floppies, it is time. Now that the new year is here. See how that rhymes?
I'm so impressed.
It is time for our award presentation, award show. We're going to hand out what we think is the best and worst in various categories. Eric, would you like to tell them what the name of our award is?
Yes, it's the Handsome Boys 2013 First Annual Handies.
There you go. So hopefully the best comic books and comic book creators will love getting handies from the Handsome Boys.
Yep. I mean, why wouldn't you? I just want to ham it up and keep doing that voice.
You can
it's
do that.
Bright
it's
lights and your favorite stars. You love comic books, and you're going to get a handy.
You can announce every single category in that voice if you want to.
Can I really? I feel so good about this.
So, Eric, what do we got first?
Up first, Robbie, we've got Best New Series.
And the nominees?
The nominees are Rat Queens, Pretty Deadly, Sex Criminals, Satellite Sam, and Batman 66. I tell ya.
God, that voice, I'm going to be laughing the entire time.
I don't think I could keep this up. This is going to get really monotonous. We've got a lot of this to go through. I should probably just talk like a person.
Always a good idea. But, a lot of solid, really good new books this year. I mean, those are just the ones you mentioned. There's other ones. We'll put in name, but in other categories, you know, award them in a different way. My choice in this is really between Rat Queens and Pretty Deadly.
Yeah.
They're both really good in very, very different ways. I'm going to have to go with Pretty Deadly on this. It feels very fresh and new, and the arts and writing they work together really beautifully for me. And it's something I never stop reading, honestly. So, I mean, I really want to mention, I mean, all these, almost most of these books that we're going to mention are all really good. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to say Pretty Deadly is my choice for best new series. Eric, what do you think?
It's really tough because we're judging on so few issues.
That's true. Again, with any new series, that's kind of how it is.
Yeah, I mean, so you just have to, I mean, it, 3 issues down the line, it could just be complete garbage. Be like, oh man, remember when Rat Queens was good? Remember when Sex Criminals was like the best book? But I think of these, the obvious answer is Pretty Deadly because it's kind of the darling book. Right. But to be honest, I enjoy Rat Queens more.
Well, that's good enough
reason. And that's kind of nuanced, you know? But
yeah.
If I was giving out an Academy Award, it would be going to Pretty Deadly, just because right. it's the one that everyone... It's not going to My Cousin Vinny.
These are not the Academy Awards, though. These are the handies.
Yes, they're the handies.
So you're going to give a handy to Rat Queens?
If this is what you're saying, that I'll give a handy to the Rat Queens.
Okay, good. That is my very close runner-up, honestly. So
yeah. So congratulations, Rat Queens. What are you going to do with your new handy?
Enjoy it.
Next up, we have a new category for the best book that's whatever in the goddamn hell Battling Boy is.
And the winner is?
The winner for this category, Battling Boy. I didn't see it coming.
Neither will him.
Who would have thought?
I know. But
this is really, I think this is just an excuse to gush about
it is
how great Battling Boy is.
It is. It was released all in one thing. It's not a proper comic book necessarily. It's like the same size as a pocket manga, but it's not a manga.
Even pocket manga is a collection of
exactly
of like the weekly, like, you know, releases.
Right. And so it's not a graphic. I don't want to call it a graphic novel because I hate that word. I hate those terms. And
yeah, I comic is not a dirty word, people.
No, it isn't. So, but it needs to be mentioned because it's so good. It's a great story. Works. It's an all ages book. Which is another great thing about it. It has a lovely confluence of influences from comics in general.
Yeah.
And really fun and fresh and exciting. And after meeting Paul Pope, I'm very excited about the Roar West and the more Battling Boy stories. They're going to be, I can't imagine, they're going to be great. I'm so excited for them. I wish they were out now.
So I think it's kind of says something sad about us that Paul Pope gives us a great all ages book and we give him a handy.
I know.
But that Paul Pope is a well-deserved handy.
It is. Paul Pope and Battling Boy, enjoy your handy.
It is delightful. Well, next up, Robbie, it is the first time inaugural Miranda Shot Award for the least subtle shot of a female badonkadonk.
And there's... I don't know what else. I mean, the winner of this, I think, is obvious. He's the one who, I mean, we named it in his books.
Yes, in his honor.
His honor. So, do you want to do your voice?
Lanil Francis Yu, come on down.
Yes. We both enjoy his art, but seriously.
Well, you know, I've never seen a well-drawn girl's butt that I didn't enjoy, but you gotta call a dude out on that.
I know. I mean, honestly.
I think it's... If you're telling a story about people, you should treat the characters like people.
And it's not like this... It's an Avengers book where they're fighting, you know, space aliens of immense power? Mm-hmm. Probably, I mean, contextually, you might not want to make asses the big focus of a page.
Yeah, I think I'm just saying.
Not that I'm not complaining. They're very well drawn asses.
Yes, I. You will never
put them
see
in another
me.
Book.
Yeah, you. Mm-hmm. You will never see me complain about lady butts.
It's just, I mean, maybe next year someone else will take it from me, Francis. But
someone will take that torch and run with it.
Yeah, someone else will get a handy instead of you.
Yep.
But this year it's yours.
Yes. Lanille Francis Yu, this is your handy.
Next up is Best Continuing Series. So these are series that are did not start this year, are continuing on. We have four nominees. Saga, Hawkeye, Daredevil, and The Manhattan Projects. My choice, I mean, these are all amazing books. This is I want to say that despite some of the bad books we read this year, this was an amazing year in comics.
There were a lot of great things that we read. I really think before Robbie and I started doing this, I did not read. I read pretty sparsely. I mean, I liked comics, but I didn't read like this. And there's been a lot of great stuff that I've discovered. It has really been a lot of really exciting things.
Yeah, and I don't think it's possible for me. I have to say Saga. It's just so good.
You're not going to get any contention from me. Saga is clearly the far and away the winner. It is an incredible book. I would love to give Brian K. Vaughan his handy in person.
Honestly, yeah, he deserves it. Mm-hmm. It's Saga may end up being one of the best comic books ever.
It's hard not to see it as such.
And I mean, I'd like to. Hawkeye's great. It definitely is changing superhero comics.
Yeah, good lord, Hawkeye is an amazing, amazing, amazing book. And Saga, there's no question in my mind
that is better.
Saga, yes.
I mean, the third trade is in. I've waited on trades for this because, like Eric's, I think he's mentioned this when we've done individual issues. It's just painful.
Yeah.
Because you want more. You just want. Mm-hmm. And it's not coming out till March, the third trade. I'm just like, oh, God, I want it now. It seems like it's been forever since the last one. But it's. Saga's great. And Brian K. Vaughan says he could write this for 15 years. I could read this for 15 years. I could read it forever. Mm-hmm. Saga's great, and it deserves. It deserves its big giant handy.
It does. The most loving of handies. Next up, the first ever handy for stupidest event ever. This year, Robbie, we've got Forever Evil, The Age of Ultron, and Trinity War.
Oh, some really good competition in this category.
I know. I think only one of these made you, like, spit bile at the microphone.
It did, and that's why I have to pick Forever Evil. It's the freshest in my mind. I mean, Age of Ultron was a comic book that featured mostly, like, shots of rubble. Mm-hmm. And a completely asinine time-traveling story about Wolverine going back in time and killing another version of himself that was traveling through time. And it all led to almost nothing except the. It might lead to Ultimate Spider-Man coming into our universe, into the mainstream Marvel universe. So it may have that goodness in it, but otherwise it was pretty bad. Trinity War was terrible as well, and it led directly into Forever Evil. But Forever, it's just after that last issue I read. Oh my god! If you listen to last week's episode, you'll hear me rant for about 5 minutes about it. It just is terrible.
It's now the ringtone of my phone.
It's everything I hate about modern. Everything in modern comic books I don't like is Forever Evil. It's awful.
So that's a cold and bitter handy for Forever Evil.
It's a hate handy.
It is.
Next up is a handy for the cutest mouse medic that dies a awful, gruesome, grisly death. And there's only really one nominee, but I think it merited mentioning. In Saga issue number 12, there is an adorable little mouse medic we get to know for about two or three pages, and then it, like, melts.
Yep, he's gone.
And it's... I wanted to mention just because it how good Saga is, it makes you feel for a little throwaway mouse character you've known for three pages.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of a shortcut to use cute animals, but
it is.
I thought it was because doesn't he like he swears and like I don't know, there was like some weirdness to his character.
Yeah, he had a little bit of like a.
He had some character to him for someone that had like three panels.
Yeah, some idea. He had a little bit of an identity.
Mm-hmm. God, Saga.
Saga. Yeah. Saga. But that goes another, that handy.
Another handy for
Saga.
For Brian K. Vaughan and his Saga. Yeah.
Next up, we have a handy for the biggest surprise of the year. This is for books that kind of came out of nowhere that we weren't really expecting to be great, and yet they were. And we've already mentioned we read two of those books this week, actually. So, mm-hmm. And I mentioned the third. First is Buzzkill. Second, Superior Foes of Spider-Man. And third is Larfleeze. And all these books, I was not expecting anything from any of these books, honestly. I just kind of went into them blind and been very surprised by their quality.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to go after... Oh, it's really hard for this one. I'm going to go with Superior Foes of Spider-Man.
Ooh.
Like every week I read it, I'm just over, I love it. I just enjoy it thoroughly. And I was in with a book that, with a name like that, I think was the biggest surprise to me.
Because, I mean, it's almost like misdirection.
Yeah.
That it's a Superior Spider-Man story. So you're like, well, I don't want to read this retarded shit.
Exactly. And then I go, oh, this has nothing to do with Superior Spider-Man. It's great. So that is my choice. Eric, what do you think?
You know what my answer is. I've already gushed about Larfleeze once in this episode. It is a delight. It continues to delight me. I may be a fan for life. Something that I had never even dreamed would exist. It is a hell of a book. So my handy goes to Mr. Larfleeze.
Next up is best single issue, and the three nominees are Hawkeye number 11, otherwise the known as the Pizza Dog issue, Infinity number 3, which you get to see. Thor put a hole through a guy with his Mjolnir that circled around the sun,
mm-hmm.
a sun. And then Buzzkill number 1, which a delightful issue that really introduced the series in a really wonderful way. There's three nominees here. One issue, when I was thinking about this category, immediately sprang to mind, and it's Hawkeye number 11. It's so interesting and innovative way to tell a story, and you know tread over ground. You see the story, see it, everything happen through the eyes of a dog. The way they use iconography in it, and the way it tells the story in an interesting way, while keeping the story and while fitting in with the overall theme of the book, just wonderful.
There were a lot of really great books that we've read. But I agree, this is one that pushes the genre forward.
Yes.
You know, this is unique. This is something really new and really clever and really innovative. And it's almost impossible to give it enough praise. It is an amazing, amazing read.
It shows what a comic book can do, mm-hmm. in something that you don't expect. You never think about storytelling in a comic book like the way it happens in this issue. And I think it deserves recognition for that alone. Very creative. Very, very interesting. Next up is, I think, a category I think needed inclusion is handy for the best book we didn't read, at least on the podcast. Nominees, Private Eye, which is by Brian K. Vaughan and Marcus Martin. Fatale, Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. Manhattan Projects by Jonathan Hickman and Nick Patara. East of West, also written by Jonathan Hickman. I forget the artist. And Prophet written by Brandon Graham with various artists, some by him, some by others. Mm-hmm. And I think we haven't read any of these on the podcast. I mean, I read Manhattan Projects. I do read them. Trades, East of West, only one trade has come out, and it's wonderful. Profits, the same way. I've only recently got the second trade. Fatal is great. Private Eye, we're going to read Private Eye as soon as it's complete. It's an online-only comic with Brian K. Vaughan and Marcos Martin, which means it's probably wonderful. I want to do it in Nerd Boy Book Club, not just give one issue kind of a once-over.
Yeah.
I'm going to do the whole thing. I'm going to pick... it's hard for me. I know Eric hasn't read probably any of these.
I have read Prophet because, as you know, I'm a huge Brandon Graham fan. Yeah. So I just by default have to give Brandon Graham a handy.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think we all want to give Brandon Graham a handy.
I think it's important.
It is. He deserves it.
He does. He does.
I'm gonna go Manhattan Projects, but all of these are. This is more of, we haven't mentioned these on the podcast, but read them. Mm-hmm. All these books are really good and deserve attention. Fatal, like Ed Brubaker has done tons and tons of detective kind of stories, noir detective crime stories. Doing this weird horror twist on it with a female main character is really good. Manhattan Projects is my pick because it's insane. It's about, you know, mad science, like actual.
Oh,
like,
no! I'm realizing by your description that I actually read your copy. It is bananas.
Yeah, it's like Einstein and Oppenheimer and other like famous scientists being completely insane, enrolled in this government program to develop like crazy technologies in the 50s.
It's nut burgers. I think I like Prophet better personally. Yeah. Prophet is
very good.
Prophet is very, very, it's like Brandon Graham's love letter to Mobius.
Yeah, it is.
It's just so weird, but it's so Mobius, but so Brandon Graham at the same time.
Yeah.
It's I don't know. I likes that guy.
I'm a fan myself. I mean, honestly, if I was going to say the best, my favorite thing I've read this year, aside from Saga, is King City, which I can't... King City's come out, a few years ago at this point, but...
It's even older than that, but the actual trade wasn't released until not so long ago.
But I will mention that here, that the best book that is not in any of these categories is King City, and it deserves 10 times the attention it gets. It's really, really good. So, a handy for both Manhattan Projects and Prophet, and King City handy for Brandon Graham.
Yep.
Yep. Next up is Best Relaunch. And there's tons of books that get relaunched every year. A lot of them are licensed books.
Like every DC book?
Yes, a lot of
DC books. Relaunched.
Yes, yeah. A lot of the, I mean, I don't necessarily consider them quote unquote relaunches, but I think stands out far and above is Astro City.
Mm.
Every issue we've read has been wonderful.
Yeah, I cannot dissent from that at all.
Yeah, and it's continuing on. I'm very glad that Kurt Busiek and Brent Anderson are continuing on with the series after a long hiatus. It was. Kurt Busiek had a lot of health problems. I'm very glad that he's better and that this book is now alive again, because it's a really good take on superhero comics. It should be out there. It should be present. So, a handy for Astro City?
Absolutely. Great big old handy.
Great big handy.
Mm-hmm. Well, Robbie, this is just the best Spider-Man comic that guest starred Matt Smith.
Yes. I just thought this was hilarious, because when you read the Marvel Knights Spider-Man, it's wonderfully drawn, very beautiful, kind of a crazy Spider-Man fighting every villain he's ever fought kind of story. But he looks like Matt Smith. Like, Peter Parker, I've never pictured him as looking like Matt Smith.
Right.
He looks like Matt Smith in this book.
It guest stars Matt Smith, but not really, because his name's not on it.
It is.
We're not paying that guy shit.
Nope. Matt Smith doesn't get a dime from this book, even though he looks like it's him. Looks like it's fucking Spider-Man Doctor Who crossed over.
It's just sort of kind of looks like Matt Smith.
Exactly.
Big handy to Marvel Knights Spider-Man.
Exactly, a big handy.
I had forgotten about that book. Oh my god.
You did.
The book is like Spider-Man drugs.
It is. The following ones aren't as confusing, but they're still kind of weird. It's not like the weirdness went away. And he still looks like Matt Smith. He just has his mask on, so you don't know.
Yes. You know. Under there, it's Matt Smith.
Yeah. Okay, next up is Worst Comics. Worst single issue we read for the podcast. Nominees: RoboCop Last Stand number 1, Reality Check number 1, Damien Son of Batman number 1, and Batman Inc. number 13, Blasphemy, a Grant Morrison comic.
Jesus.
On the worst comics of
Grant Morrison. Mighty have fallen.
My pick for this. Oh, it's so hard because these are all really bad.
Here's the question: is this like an Ed Wood category, or is this just
no?
Is this Ed Wood, or is this The Room?
This is The Room.
This is The Room.
The thing you hate.
It's this is tough. This is tough. Because for me, it's between Damien and Batman Inc. I think I got to go with my gut on this. Batman Inc. I love Grant Morrison, and this makes me want to hit him in the face.
Yeah, I have the same dilemma. I'm going to go the inverse.
Uh-huh.
And say Damien, Son of Batman, because it...
Both strong, strong contenders.
Yeah, my problem with Damien is that, first of all, Damien's dead in current DC continuity. So, we're presupposing that he comes back to life some point. It starts with Batman dying.
Mm-hmm. And then, whoops, he's not dead.
Like, it doesn't even take an entire issue for him to be not dead.
Yes.
And then the hackneyed writing is just awful, awful, awful. The art's not terrible, but it's a bad, bad book.
Didn't you actually subject yourself to a couple more issues of it?
No. I saw screen caps online of the second issue, in which Damien breaks Batman's neck and kills him.
Naturally.
That may color my thoughts on this. I don't know. But
no,
Batman
813
is, again... There's so many people who say, oh, I love Grant Morrison's run on Batman. It's, you know, it's beautiful and lovely and tells so much, it has such intricate study of the character. One, the New 52 fucked it all up. Because they make Batman continuity, like, the same, but not. Which makes no sense in the way that the story works in Grant Morrison's story. And if you haven't read 7 years of the story, Batman Inc. 13 is completely – makes no sense. It just is
– No.
It's confusing and weird.
It really, really is. So it's apparently a book for no one except people who have been reading a billion years of what I can only presume are comics that make me want to pull my head off.
I don't know. I mean, probably a lot of them, I'd imagine.
Hmm.
I don't know if I... Maybe I've just outgrown Batman or something.
I guess so. Certainly Damien, Son of Batman.
Yes.
I'll take them all out.
I know. God, that's so terrible. What, is he the Punisher? Whatever. Okay. Next up, we're hitting the nitty gritty here.
We're winding it down.
Okay.
This is the tensions are high.
Yeah. So next up is best Marvel book.
Mm.
And I purposely didn't include Hawkeye or Daredevil because they were in the best continuing series category.
Okay, well, I think so like the Oscars, they could win both of them if you wanted to. But it's,
they could.
It's our rules. Whatever.
It is our rules. I didn't include them. They're obviously both very good. But these are of the other books we've read, and they're also very good. I think they deserve mention. One, Thor, God of Thunder.
Mm-hmm.
Next, Venom, Captain Marvel, and New Avengers. And Eric, what is your choice? I want to know yours first.
It is a tough call because I like all of these books. I like New Avengers. I like Venom. But I think certainly after picking up and reading The God Butcher, I have to go with Thor, God of Thunder. It's an amazing book. Awesome and epic. And true to those words. It's not awesome like a hot dog. It is awesome. Awesome like a God of Thunder hitting a guy with a space shark.
With a space shark in the face.
Yes, that's that. If that ain't awesome, I don't know what is.
Yeah, and I'm full agreement here. Thor, God of Thunder, deserves the handy for best Marvel book.
It is tough competition.
Yeah,
these are
is.
Great, great titles.
I mean, Venom just ended. Although from the cover of the Free Comic Book Day Guardians of the Galaxy, Venom is front and center in that book. Soldier Venom.
Uh-oh.
So he may be going in outer space. I'm not sure how that... Brian Michael Bendis, Soldier Venom, with Rocket Raccoon and all those crazy characters, is pretty interesting. I certainly would read it. Captain Marvel has been really good. I mean, the revitalization of Carol Danvers, she's like, along with Captain Marvel, along with the Jonathan Hickman Avengers books, she's really become a big character in the Marvel universe, deservedly so. And that costume change, the costume change alone,
absolutely
is so much better than the Miss Marvel costume. But I have to go Thor, God of Thunder. It's so big, so fun, so epic.
Mm.
I can't not pick it.
Yes.
That God Butcher arc, I don't know if it can be topped. It's so good. But
it's about as good as comics can get. It's great.
It is. And so Thor, God of Thunder, enjoy your handy.
Enjoy that handy.
Next up is the handy for best DC book. We could nominate a lot of... We've read tons of DC, just like we've read tons of Marvel. Mm-hmm. But I think it comes down to two, honestly.
And it's a tough call. That's a tough call.
Yeah, it comes down to Animal Man or Larfleeze. Those are certainly the most DC books we've read the most of, and the ones I consider the most fondly. And I think I know what Eric's going to pick, but I'm going to go Animal Man.
It's hard. It is actually very hard for me not to pick Animal Man. I feel obligated to pick Larfleeze. I have felt like pangs of regret that I can't pick Animal Man also.
Yeah, it's
because goddamn, these are good books.
Yes.
These are so good.
The New 52, we are generally down on a lot of it.
Well, DC is making a lot of really poor decisions.
Yeah, but
they're
Animal
doing a
Man,
lot of dumb things.
Animal Man is not one of those things.
No,
and
it
certainly
is not.
Larfleeze is not as well. They're both diamonds in the rough.
Mm-hmm.
That is one reason I want to make sure that we read DC books every week, because these books are there. It's not a barren wasteland. There are little oases you can find. And both of these books are very, very good. Two handies.
Mm-hmm.
One each for Animal Man and Larfleeze.
Yep.
And here we go. This is the cream of the crop. They rise to the top. They come to get down. They come to get down. Get on your feet. Jump around.
Yes.
This is the handy for best artist, first and foremost. And the nominees are there. I mean, we could probably make a list twice as large as this if we.
I think these are the important high points.
Yeah, these are the people that we remembered after throughout the year. So Emma Rios for Pretty Deadly, mm-hmm. Fiona Staples Saga, Esad Ribic for Thor: God of Thunder, Chris Samnee Daredevil, David Aja Hawkeye, and Fraser Irving for his work on Uncanny X-Men.
What a talented bunch of people. I mean, all of them
have completely different styles.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's also really wonderful, that the fact that there's so much, mm-hmm. you can stylistically, they can be so different, but still the quality is still there. Eric, you're the artist. I want to know what you pick. It's a very difficult decision.
It is, but I have to follow my heart here and go with Fiona Staples, who really deserves more recognition for her brilliance. Saga is genius, and in no small part is it her contribution. She is really, really quite excellent, and I'm happy to give her a handy.
As much as I want, I mean, I love all these artists are wonderful,
mm-hmm.
but I have to agree with you. Saga is such an amazing book, and Brian K. Vaughan is like a superstar. Everyone knows who he is.
Yeah.
And I don't think, because of that, I think she gets overshadowed a little bit. But
yes.
her work on this is amazing, and mm-hmm. I don't think she gets as much credit as she should for her part in the storytelling and her amazing art. It's truly wonderful.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That was Best Artist. And now we're going to finish up the first annual Handys Award with the Handys for Best Writer. Nominees are Mark Waid for Daredevil, Brian K. Vaughan for Saga, Matt Fraction for Hawkeye, Jeff Lemire for Animal Man, and Jonathan Hickman. I lumped in New Avengers, Avengers Infinity, all those things kind of tying together basically all his Avengers work. He wrote several indie books as well. I'm gonna, just for the world construction, I'm put it forward for the Avengers, all his Avengers work. And I will go first on this one and say, as much as I want to make it a clean sweep for Saga, and Brian K. Vaughan has done a wonderful job on it, and all these books are so good, I have to say Matt Fraction and Hawkeye.
Huh.
It's I love all of these books, and they all do things in a wonderfully different way. But Hawkeye is taking a character that is like the also-ran of the Avengers and making the thing that everyone always complained about him. Oh, he's just a guy with a bow and arrow. He's just a normal guy. And that everyone always complained about that when he was in the Avengers. And that made him admit that he took that trait and made it the most amazing thing about him. It made the fact that he's just the normal guy with a bow and arrow the best thing about Hawkeye. And made a character I really didn't care about one of the most interesting characters. I got the hardcover for Christmas, reread it. It's so, so good. And it's different in superhero comics. And without Matt Fraction, I don't think it would. Matt Fraction has a different mindset than a lot of guys who write in comic books. And without him, Hawkeye wouldn't exist as we know it. Eric, what is your choice?
It's incredibly tough for me, and I feel like I would be a sellout to say Saga again.
Because
I agree with everything you're. Well, I know I agree with everything you're saying. I agree with everything you're saying about Hawkeye. And part of me even wants to throw it to Hickman for, like, the Infinity arc and all the related tie-ins.
Yeah.
Just because we spent I've been so critical of, you know, different parts of it, even despite the fact that I thought it was fantastic. It really is a tough call. Hawkeye's amazing. Infinity was amazing. Animal Man's fantastic. But I think I got to go with Brian.
Okay.
He's just, God, it's just so good and so rich. It's just such a great work. It just really is. Just yeah. the the world building and all the ideas, and it's just so thoroughly and so well done, you know, so through composed, I suppose I would say.
I can't argue with it. Saga is.
It's a stellar book. I like that you picked Hawkeye because everything you said, I'm right there with you, but I don't think I can add anything insightful to that. So I will go with Saga.
Yeah. Saga's, I mean, it is beautiful and genuine. I think that's the best thing you can say about Saga. Above all the other amazing things about it, is the
it's kind of the
are
right.
Real.
It's kind of the best thing you can say about any kind of art is that it's honest.
Yes.
And it
feels real. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's great. So we each give a handy one to Matt Fraction and one to Brian K. Vaughan. Brian K. Vaughan is getting a collection of handies.
He really is. He's going to be pretty whooped.
He's going to have to haul those handies around.
Yep, it's true.
It's true. It's damn true. Eric, would you like to bring us to a close? Bring the first annual handies to a close.
Ladies and gentlemen, those were the first annual Handsome Boys Comics Hour handies. Give yourself a hand.
As many as you'd like.
As many. So very many.
But with that, it will bring us to a close this week. I hope you enjoyed it. We certainly did. Can't wait. This is the second year, I guess. This will be our second year in the podcast, technically. Mm-hmm. Not really. We haven't done a year of podcasts yet, but it will be our second year doing the podcast. So
Spanning 2 years.
And I'm very excited about where it takes us. I'm excited for the new year, for a whole new year of comic books. This was a great year of comics. For all the bad stuff we read, I cannot criticize. You get such good stuff. But that was episode 34. We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at handsomeboyscomicshour.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/handsomeboyscomicshour. You can also find us on iTunes. Search Handsome Boys Comics Hour. Find us there. Subscribe. Leave us reviews. We love good reviews. You can email us at handsomeboyscomics@gmail.com as well as contact us at Twitter on at HBCHour. Leave us comments, leave us hate mail, leave us fan mail, leave us suggestions, anything. We like to hear from you, regardless of what it is. You can also find us on Tumblr at handsomeboyscomicshour.tumblr.com. You can find me at Twitter. I am MixmasterCereal. That's MixmasterCereal. Same name on Tumblr. Eric, where can they find you and your things online?
You can take a look at my things at freewillunlimited.com. You can also see many of the other things I do at ericzgoodnight.com. And, well, hey, you can just tweet at me at Mr. Bad Example. That is spelled M-R, bad example. Thank you, Robbie.
So,
back to you, Robbie.
Yes. So until next time, folks, have a good one.
Rock and roll, people. Push the goddamn button.